is Christopher, and I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters Podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Matt and I would love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with us. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Time Shifters Pod, and Matt is at Movies at the Matt. And you can send us a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of those outlets. Now, let's head to the Time Shifter studio and start the show. Everyone, welcome back. Matt, the studio seems a little, it seems really big right now. We don't have anybody with us.
No echoing.
Yeah. Last two episodes, we've had someone join us, you know, via the Skypes, and this time it's just us.
Yeah.
But it's all right. I've discovered that every time, for every person you add to the podcast, you add about 10 or 20 minutes to the show.
That's true.
I noticed that. That's something to keep in mind going forward. So how you been?
Good. Busy, but good.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. It's just October is just always a busy month. Just everything going on. And this hasn't been any exception.
Right. We gained the hour, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we gained the hour, and I usually get a chance to take advantage of it because that's usually, it's only midnight. It's not 1 o'clock. And so I'll just stay up a little later. But we had a kid overnight last night, so I wasn't anywhere near the television. I didn't get to take it. Didn't get to take advantage of the time change this year. All right, so we got some news. You said you got a few things. One of the things I think was on your list too was they're talking about doing a sequel to Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes,
which is interesting. Not going to happen until like 2021 or something like that.
Right.
But still, I'm assuming something like that would probably take some time to. You got to write it, animate it. I understand why there might be a little gap. At first, right off the bat, I was really excited for it because I really enjoyed Into the Spider-Verse. I saw someone else's thought, and I was like, it's kind of one of those things where it makes you think a little bit. And there it was just another tweet, a response to it or something. It's like, if this was going to be a Morales, you know, part two kind of thing, I'd be into it. But if it's just more multiverse, I guess they were afraid, you know, is this just going to be more of the same? Mm. You know, just another story with multiverse, or just an excuse to bring in other versions of Spider-Man. And like, yeah, I guess I can kind of see their point there. But still, if they get the same people behind it and actually write an inventive and creative script to go along with it, I'll let it pass.
Yeah.
I'll take more of the same if it's going to be that good.
You're right. The thing about that first one is that movie just sort of came out. Like, there wasn't any hype behind it. There wasn't any expectation. Like, I didn't even know it was something that was being worked on until trailers were dropping. And it's like, oh, okay, this movie's coming out. So now it has a following. Now it has expectation. So which way do you go with it? Do you do more of the same? Do you do the things that you wanted to do in the first movie but didn't get a chance to? So it's like, okay, is this all of your extra ideas and not your best ideas? Yeah. Do you continue Miles' story? Like, do we get just Miles? Do we not even get a Spider-Verse? Do we not get the multiverse? Do we just get him in his version of New York being his own kind of hero? That's the kind of movie I would want.
Right.
You could call it Spider-Verse 2, even though there's no multiverse, just because it's a franchise at this point. That's what you do.
Yeah.
But I don't think they'll be doing that.
No, I'm sure not.
Because they had talked about trying to get all of the different live-action Spider-Men to come in and portray their roles animated. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll do that here, and maybe it'll just be kind of corny and hammy. And like, that's what I'm concerned about. Like, this was a really good movie, a great script, wonderful character development. Is it going to take a step back?
Fine line that they have to walk to keep it.
Right.
Good versus just, we enjoyed Spider-Ham, but we don't need tons of Spider-Ham.
Right.
You know?
He didn't even show up to like an hour into the movie. Let's leave him there.
Right. If you really think we want Spider-Ham, then give him his own movie.
Exactly.
Well, don't just shoehorn him into the next movie or something just because, the fans want it. kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, no, you don't know what the fans want.
Right. The fans don't know what the fans want.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what that first movie proved. Like, we didn't know we wanted this, and we loved it. So do your movie. Don't do our movie.
Yeah, that was the way it didn't have any promotion or anything prior to it being released. It really kind of felt like maybe they were planning on just doing it just yet another direct-to-video kind of thing. And then they at some point went, no, no, let's up the budget, let's put it on the screen. Right. Like those several like Green Lantern movies or Justice League movies and stuff that have been done through DC that are just direct-to-video. So I wonder if that was kind of Marvel's thinking on this one. It was just,
this would have been Sony.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's a good point. Spider-Man would still have been in Sony. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was always a plan to put it on the big screen or not.
Right.
Because, like you said, there was just, oh, by the way, there's this new movie. Whoa.
Oh, okay. All right.
I guess I'll go see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it'll be curious. I mean, we got some time to, I'm sure, I'm thinking it will not be the same case in this. This one will probably be hyped to all get out between now and its release.
No question.
Yeah. The CW is talking about developing a new Superman and Lois Lane series starring the Tyler Hoechlin.
Heckland.
It works better. Tyler Heckland, who has portrayed Superman on Supergirl. So they're talking like he will headline, be the Superman mm-hmm. for the series. And I guess the same woman that played Lois, if I'm not mistaken, too.
Yep.
Interesting. Maybe. I feel like we've tread that water pretty deeply before with Lois and Clark. And then with the CW, the way they kind of do their shows, they are practically soap operas anyway. And it seems like this one's definitely going to be, oh, and they're superheroes. Right. You know, so I don't know. I like Tyler Heckland. I like his
too.
Superman. So it's kind of like, yeah, I'm happy for you. But I'm a little worried about what route this is going to take.
Yeah, so I kind of see like pros and cons here because his Superman and his Clark is well established. This is a Superman who's been around a while. This is a Clark who's been in a long relationship with Lois. She knows who he is. Where things left off in Supergirl, they're having a baby. So this is a relationship that's many years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to just sort of jump into that and see where they are, rather than like, oh, they've just met and they're getting to know each other and she doesn't know he's Superman yet, and we can bypass all of that.
Yeah, it sounds like from the description I was reading is that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to look at their relationship, their the trials and tribulations of first time parenthood and the fact that he's Superman and how that dives into it.
Like, yeah.
So if they actually get some really good stories behind it, you could really pull this off. I would like to see sort of how you're Superman, you're a superhero. You have to, you have what you think this responsibility, and now you've got this split responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's like, where's the line?
Mm-hmm.
How easy it is to cross one way or the other? Do you not go and save that train and that's careening off some cliff in Europe somewhere, or because it's your kid's first birthday?
Right. Yeah. And they've been dealing with that actually in the comic books for the last several years. They've had Clark and Lois have a baby. Now I think he's like a preteen at this point. He's grown up. And so it's this whole idea of like, he's Superman and he's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that exact same thing of like wrestling, and their son has superpowers. And so he's trying to teach his son how to be responsible and how to be good. But then he also has that thing of like, oh, I'm a dad. I make dad mistakes and I expect too much of my kid. And you know, the way I treat everybody else is not how I treat my kid. And, you know, all of those logical things I know go out the window because it's my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been like interesting to see in the comic books. And if they bring that into a show, I think that could be a good show that kind of separates itself from everything else. Because all of the other shows, it's mostly like, I'm a superhero and that's it.
Right. There are going to be times when there is not a good choice.
Which is always the heart of Superman.
Right.
Like, that's how you beat him. You get like, okay, I can't save everyone. What's going to hurt less?
Right. So, yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what they go with it.
Yeah.
I will tune in, I think, and at least give it a try.
But on the other side of it, I did read one article that pointed out, the one issue is a lot of the major characters and villains that you would want to see in a Superman show, they've done in Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
And they've either written them poorly, so you'd either have to bring them over to Superman and write them better and have people go, well, where was that in Supergirl?
Right.
Or you'd have to just not use them. And then this person said, we're establishing Brandon Routh as Superman. He's leaving Legends of Tomorrow. Why isn't that the Superman show we're getting? Why aren't we seeing? Because if he is the Kingdom Come Superman, this is a Superman whose Lois has died, and he has stepped away from being a hero, and his Earth has kind of gone down a bad pathway, and so he's come back to show people how to be good. There's a show to watch with a great lead actor,
right,
with a history of being Superman. And I'm sitting there going, damn, I kind of wanted that show after reading that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really good. I love the Kingdom Come miniseries, the comic series.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see something like that done in a live action.
And I like Tyler Hoechlin as Superman, too. So I'm kind of like, how do I get both?
Yeah. Sorry. Well, it's a multiverse.
Yes.
Meanwhile, on Earth 2.
Right. It's a Superman. Oh, that would be cool. It's one Superman show with both of them on their Earths.
Yeah, there you go. So you tune in 1 week and it's one you know, turn in next week. Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes they cross over and help each other.
The story's a little light. Maybe you get a little bit of both on the same episode. Yeah. I like it. You can
do
that.
All right, we're writing this.
Actually, that's all the news I had. I don't think I had anything else.
So this one's not so much news, but it just put the thought in my head. The Academy, on their official Twitter account, tweeted out, what movie has the most shocking twist in it, in anybody's opinion? There were a lot of different responses, but the response I didn't see as I went through a lot of answers. So I put in mine because I think it's the ultimate, which is, it's Psycho.
Oh, you're talking about the star of the film, or the fact that he's mother. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Any of it. You know, the star of the film gets killed within the first like half hour, 40 minutes of the movie.
Right.
And then it turns out that the guy is the mother.
Yeah.
Every movie since then has tried to be Psycho.
Yeah, I was going to say, could that be considered like really the first big twist?
Yeah.
I mean,
movie.
Yeah. I mean, without that, would we have, you know, I See Dead People? And
exactly. Because everyone was like, oh, Sixth Sense, The Others. And I'm sitting there going like, Psycho. Without Psycho, you don't have that.
That's a good one. Because, that was my first go-to, was something like, you just asked the question. I'm thinking, I don't know. Yeah, Sixth Sense is one of the first ones, but that's because it's fairly recent, that comes right to mind. The Others is a good one. I'll admit that I kind of took me a while to catch on to that until they kind of revealed it. Went, oh, you know. So yeah, that was a good one on them. But yeah, I like Psycho. That was kind of the first. Yeah. I mean,
so my response was like, it's Psycho, and then there's everything else.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
So that's mine.
Yeah, that's where.
So if anybody else has one,
absolutely.
Tell us.
Yeah. Very good.
It's been reported, Netflix, to my knowledge, hasn't made a comment on this, but it's been reported that they want to experiment with playback speeds for certain movies and possibly for all programs. That way people can watch things a little bit faster and binge a little bit quicker. And you're shaking your head no, and that's pretty much how everyone's reacting. Like, every director, every writer, like, pacing matters in a movie. And speaking of Hitchcock, could you imagine if somebody decided, let's speed that up just a little bit? Like, that walk up the stairs to the house is no longer terrifying.
I don't know. If that's the way you want to consume your movies and stuff, man, don't talk to me. I think that's terrible. I was telling you, I mean, I do that with, like, podcasts.
Right.
I'll do, like, the 1 1/8 speed just to give it that little extra speed, and maybe I'll do the silence truncate thing or whatever, just to, so an hour show is 50 minutes or something, just a little bit. That's just audio. That's just people talking or whatever. A movie. Yeah, no. I mean, first of all, I would think that, you know, it could almost be comical when you're watching like a chase scene or something in an action film. That'd be terrible. Yeah, it's so much stuff. The slow builds, you know, and a good suspense or whatever would be completely lost. It's just no.
Yeah.
If just find a different time to watch that watch your movies or something when you can sit down and you can spend 2 hours and just watch it the way it was meant to be watched.
If you're the kind of person that wants to watch it sped up just so you can say you saw it, just go read the wiki.
Yeah, yeah, like, really.
You clearly aren't really watching it. You're not taking it in how it's meant to be. The one thing that a friend of mine pointed out is, well, this would be really good for documentaries. Some documentaries just take a while and the narrator is slow and it's not something that needs pacing. It's just sort of like, oh, this documentary, we want to get it to an hour. And then they went to, like, okay, speed it up.
Sure.
So if they put it in for something just for that and then other things you can't access it, okay.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
For a movie or like they work a lot with David Fincher, who does their Mindhunter series. This guy, to me, is like a modern-day Hitchcock. He's all about suspense. He's all about drawing things out. Like, he might not come back if they do this.
Right. I think if this actually becomes a thing that a lot of people are doing, if I was a filmmaker, I'd start filming my films just a little bit slower.
Exactly. I thought
yeah,
of that
go
too.
Ahead. Speed that up,
right.
Smart guy.
Yeah. Now it's normal.
Yeah, if you watch it in regular time,
Why is this movie 8 hours long?
I think it's a horrible idea.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's just terrible.
Arnold Schwarzenegger has said that he, since doing this new Terminator movie, that he is open to doing sequels to some of his other movies that have never had sequels before, including True Lies 2 and Last Action Hero 2. And Last Action Hero 2 really caught my interest.
I'm a lover of... I enjoyed Last Action Hero.
I did,
I was
too.
One of the few people that in my circle that actually thought that was a lot of fun.
I don't get what people don't like about it. Even when they tell me, I'm like, no, I don't see that at all. And Last Action Hero 2 would work because you could do something of like... Jack Slater has been sitting around wondering why he hasn't been going on any adventures or why they've been boring. And then he gets pulled back into the real world to discover... Oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor for a bunch of years. That's why I didn't do anything for a long stretch of time. And now he's just doing boring sequels. That's why all of the things I've been doing seem cookie cutter. And the whole reason he gets pulled back into the real world is because Danny, the kid from the first movie, is trying to warn Jack that in the next movie they're going to kill him off.
Oh,
that's
my
idea.
There you go. I like it. I like that.
And now it's like, how do we save Jack Slater? Maybe you don't. Maybe a franchise has to die.
Yeah.
Look right in the camera and say that to people. Yeah.
I like that idea. Yeah, well, how has Dark Fate been doing box office? At the time that we're recording, it's been, I think, a week. Did it open this weekend or last weekend?
I think it was this weekend.
Was it this weekend? Okay.
Let me see.
I've seen kind of mixed reviews from people I follow on Twitter or Facebook. You know, it seems to be a love it or hate it, or it wasn't good, but it was fun. And that good, not good, but fun isn't box office number kind of. That doesn't bode well for the money as far as that goes, and doesn't make people want to go, oh, we should put them in more stuff.
Well, it opened at number one, so it's this weekend, so all of the weekend numbers aren't in yet.
I'm not surprised it opened at number one. I think a Terminator, you have a Terminator film, that's going to open well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it does in the, you know, over the course of the weekend and the rest of the week.
Yeah, so I've kind of
Don't foresee it staying there for next weekend.
Right.
I think you could release just about anything and bump it off the number one spot.
Right. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to – I don't know what its budget is, but I don't know if it'll make a big profit, if at all.
Yeah. The trailers that I saw, you know, they had me interested until about halfway into the trailer when suddenly there's planes blowing up. And, yeah, it's like, oh, so it's one of those action films.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things I've enjoyed about The Terminator and The Terminator 2 – was that, yes, it was science fiction, and yes, it was all kind of, you know, fantasy and everything, but it still felt kind of grounded. And when you suddenly have your action taking place on a exploding 747 and doing practically the A-team kind of thing with with the tank. Yeah, that's not grounded. And that kind of pulls me out a little bit.
I think what made those first two movies good, that every single other movie has abandoned is they kind of took a page out of horror. You know, the whole idea of, like, he's getting closer,
right.
He's got a gun. In the second one, it's a knife, and, like, there's all these parts where you're like, watch your feet, he's swinging the knife at you, like, he's getting yeah. closer. Like,
right.
it's Michael Myers more mm-hmm. than science fiction at that point.
Sure.
It's that's and they've never done that since. It's all just been about how many explosions can we get? How can we explain how this machine is able to take over? Like, no,
yeah.
just have the thing creep closer and closer, and that's what gets you going.
Yeah, because in both, particularly the first one and maybe a little bit in the second one, it was a lot of bit. They played with the suspense and the whole, you don't know where he's going to be coming from.
Right.
You could turn around, you could be there, maybe not, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, Yeah, they are almost more horror than they are anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely like almost suspense films more
right.
than even science fiction films. Yeah, and you're right. They just, after that, they just, oh, that's action,
yep.
and explosions and gunplay and like kind of losing the point.
mm-hmm. I think they forget that's what made those movies good. They're like, mm-hmm. no, people like robots. It's like, no, people like being freaked out.
right, yeah. And yeah, when that second film came in with the liquid Terminator
right.
and everything,
you can look like anyone.
Yeah,
nobody is safe.
Then that was kind of freaky.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that plays into almost a little bit of body horror when
right.
you suddenly have body parts morphing and things like that. That's uncomfortable to look at. You
know, those
certainly
parts.
when at that time,
because yeah.
that was brand new.
Exactly.
No one had ever seen anything like that before.
And to me, one of the most unsettling parts of that movie is when it's early in the movie and John has called his like foster parents and he's talking to his foster mom, but we find out that's really the new Terminator, and it impales the foster dad against
yeah.
the fridge, and you just see like his head just stabbed into the fridge, and it's just like, oh, I can't look away, but it's so bad.
Yeah,
that to me is like, that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
That is straight out of a horror movie,
especially because the the Terminator
yeah.
as the foster mom is completely dispassionate about the whole thing.
Yes.
That definitely makes it horrific.
Right. That's never happened again in a Terminator movie. Nothing to that level.
Right. And it doesn't look like Dark Fate is any different.
No.
So, yeah, I haven't seen, gosh, I'm trying to think if I even saw Terminator 3. I don't think I saw the whole thing.
Was that the
female Terminator? Was that 3?
Yeah, where she was like part machine inside, but part morphing liquid and all of
oh.
that. Yeah.
Okay, then I haven't seen it.
She was a hybrid.
I must have seen clips. I
yeah.
haven't seen the film all the way through.
And then, like, she could immediately connect to any computer she was mm-hmm. near. So, like, she could turn on a bunch of cars because all cars are computerized. And it's just sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, the Terminator franchise just hasn't done what it's needed to do to draw me back in.
Right.
So, I might, because this one is kind of more of a descendant from the first two,
mm-hmm.
I might go ahead and tune into this one at some point. But yeah, I'm going to wait for home video. Definitely not going to spend movie theater dollars
right.
for it.
The last sequel I keep hearing about is there are rumblings of wanting to do Hocus Pocus 2 over at Disney Plus. I have real mixed feelings about that.
Yeah, I remember watching the Hocus Pocus years ago and thinking it was fun, and it's a big, you know, Halloween go-to for a lot of people. But I also haven't heard a lot of people saying, gosh, I wish they had made more.
There are.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing. But I'm sitting there going, it's such a self-contained movie.
It came all
the way around.
Sometimes like, things are good because they were that one film
yeah.
or that one season. Same with television shows.
Yep.
I don't think Firefly would be the Firefly, you know, phenomenon
if it went
that
on for 3 more years.
Exactly.
Right.
It was because it was that one season that everyone really liked, and then it went away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes films are that way too. Hocus Pocus was everyone really enjoyed that film.
Right.
Done.
Right.
Move on.
And that a sequel can't happen without the three Sanderson sisters.
Right.
But if you bring them back, you undo the other movie. Like, they're defeated. This was it. This was their one chance. This is the... If you all of a sudden, it's like, wait, I found an extra page to the
yeah.
book, and this is how they can come back. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why would you take that out?
And that is a problem with so many sequels, especially in the science fiction or fantasy realm, is a sequel always manages to sort of diminish and take away from that original.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, look at, like, Highlander.
Mm.
There can be only one. Turns
two,
out,
three,
or
five.
Two. Yeah, or three. And then you have a series, and it's like, that movie loses everything because of what comes after.
Yeah.
I mean, erase the idea of the Scotsman playing the Spaniard and the Frenchman playing the Scotsman. Erase all that.
Do we want to switch those? No.
No. We're going with it. Just forget about that. But yeah, that film, you can watch it and you can have a lot of fun with that film and everything. But then all the sequels just take all that away.
Yeah.
Because, I'm the one and I can do all this wonderful stuff. Okay, great. And then you don't do any of that stuff. And it turns out there's more. And, look, we can resurrect the dead guy. I'm like, well, now there's no stakes here.
Exactly.
If everyone can just get resurrected because, because you really need them to be, then what's the point? Who cares? Right.
And that's what I feel this would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunate. We'll see. If it happens, I'm sure it'll be a film that, well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say it would be a film that everyone would be really happy to see, but if it's not done right, I mean, if it turns out to be a bad movie, then it's forever going to be connected to that first movie.
Right.
And yeah. Yeah, you can only damage the first film, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the last bit of news, but I did take in several movies since last time. Saw The Addams Family, the new animated movie.
Excellent. How is it?
Go see
this awesome movie. It looked great. I love the trailers.
The trailer got me interested. This movie is way better than the trailer makes it seem. It, it's drawn like the original cartoon. It homages the show a bunch, but it, as a movie by itself, it's really, really good.
Sweet.
It's like, I went in expecting to be entertained. I did not expect to laugh several times.
Nice.
There are whole parts of this movie that are hilarious. There's this great message that goes on throughout the movie where it's like, because the whole idea is the Addams is they're weird and they're weird to everybody else. But then they kind of sneak in this thing of like, could you be weird within your own weird family?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this wonderful message of acceptance, but it's not just people accepting the Addamses. It's the Addamses accepting the people in their own family, too.
Nice.
How they are. And it's really heartfelt. It's good. Take the kids. It's that kind of movie. Like, everybody can enjoy this. Please go see it. You won't regret it.
Sweet. I'm so happy to hear that.
Other movie I saw, don't go see this movie, is Jexy, the movie where like the AI and the cell phone becomes crazy obsessed with the guy who owns the phone.
Oh, I don't know this one at all.
The first 30 minutes are funny. Like, I'm sitting there going, it's actually going to be good. And then it just completely goes downhill.
This sounds like a kind of flip around. Wasn't there a film 5-10 years ago? Maybe not 10 years ago, about someone that falls in love with their phone.
That was her. That was the Spike Jonze movie with Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
That was actually a really good movie.
Yeah, I've heard that was pretty decent.
Right,
like kind of trying to take that and reversing a little bit.
It was one of those movies where, first 30 minutes, really good, really funny. The phone is completely inappropriate and vulgar and is like interrupting him during his meetings and is like, your boss is a moron and things like that. Guy's like, what's with your phone? And the phone's like, what's with you? Things like that. And you're like, wow, people are yelling at this phone. It's kind of funny. And then you get to a point where you're like, this is where the script broke down. And this is when they just sort of started cutting scenes together. Because you get to a point where you're like, none of this makes sense. You're just telling me that it makes sense. But why did this happen? And then it ends.
Mm.
And you're like, none of the character decisions made any sense. The motivations didn't make sense. The logic didn't even make sense.
So someone had an idea for a skit.
Yes.
And they stretched it into a film.
Yes.
Yeah. That sounds like a Saturday Night Live movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
it's Pat.
Right, yeah. Exactly. That will not last for an hour and a half.
Yeah. That's what this sounds like.
So yeah. That's that movie.
Excellent. Okay.
Other one I saw was The Lighthouse.
Yeah,
the guy that wrote and directed The Witch. He came and did this movie, black and white, set in 1890, two-person cast, Willem Dafoe, Robert Pattinson.
Okay, interesting.
As two lighthouse keepers. They're working there for a month, and then just before their shift is supposed to end, a big storm comes through, and so the boat doesn't come pick them up. And then day after day, the boat can't get there because they're stuck in a storm. And so you start, and like all of these weird things are happening. You're pretty much following Robert Pattinson's character through this movie. And you start to wonder, like, Is he having a mental breakdown? Are these weird things happening? Is Willem Dafoe trying to mess with him? And it just gets weirder and more psychological. And whereas I really liked The Witch, except the ending, I felt like the ending was like, here's what happened.
Yeah,
it told you what happened. Yeah. This movie does none of that. Nice, the movie good. Ends and you're sitting there going like, I've got 5 to 10 different things that could have happened and I have no answers and I'm cool with that.
Nice.
That's how I like a movie to be.
Yeah. Very good.
Well, yeah, wonderfully acted.
All right,
beautifully
let's check that
shot.
One out.
Yeah,
nice.
Very
black
indie,
and white. That's
black
great.
And white.
I'm especially interested with Robert Pattinson now with him
with
talking about
Batman.
I'm very interested in seeing some other things that he's done since the Twilight stuff.
Yeah. Indie movie, so it's not playing at a lot of places. So, but where you can find it, go see it. It's it's definitely a movie you'll have a conversation about, even if you don't like it. You'll be like, but I want to talk about it.
Right.
Thing kind of movie.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I'm in a Lighthouse Willem Dafoe, I'm. I'm immediately going to go to him for, like, someone's messing with me.
right. And you start to get that feeling, and then you're just like, okay, I did just catch him in a lie, but because I'm seeing these kind of through Robert Pattinson's eyes, was it a lie or is he imagining it? You don't know what's happening. And then it ends, and I'm just sort of going like, we get no answers, and I don't care. It was fun.
Nice. I hate when films do the sort of, you see Timmy at the end. I really felt Event Horizon was, you know, it's a sci-fi horror film. It's really a horror film that just happens to take place on a spaceship kind of thing. And yeah, the whole time you're like, what the F is going on? And that film could have ended without ever you finding out what the F is going on. But in the end, they end up with Sam Neill. Well, you see, the ship went, turns out that he's, you know, like demon Sam Neill now or whatever, because he's possessed and whatever. I take it you've never saw the film.
No.
Yeah, it's gory. It's gross. It's vulgar, the whole movie. But it's like, it pulls you in and you're like, oh, it's like train wreck kind of thing. You got to see it. Yes, that's a person's body hanging out of it, but I got to watch. And then they kind of give an explanation as to what happened. I'm like, oh, come on.
Why'd you do that?
Yeah.
My theory was so much more fun.
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah, any one of a dozen theories that people could have had.
Because now there's no conversation to have.
Exactly.
You've taken
it
out.
You just walk away. Right. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so this movie does none of that.
Yeah, good. I like that. I've watched a lot of movies this October. I took it upon myself to watch a film.
One a day.
Yeah, every night I ended my day with a horror and or Halloween themed movie. And in one case, a television show, because I didn't have time to do a full movie or anything.
Oh, asterisk.
But so I've been watching a lot of movies. Some I've seen before. A couple I just took the advantage to, like, you know, I never saw that. And it was like one of those movies that I always saw on the VHS like shelf. Some have been a lot of fun. One night in particular, I actually did three films. I went down to the Cincinnati Art Museum, and they did a film marathon on vampires. And it was two of the three films I'd never seen before. The third one I didn't realize I had actually seen before until I was watching the movie and went, oh, I have seen this one. Mm-hmm. You know, it had been a while. But they showed the original Let the Right One In.
Okay.
Which was interesting. It was good. I liked it. The second one they showed, which was the highlight for me, they showed Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. It was from 2014, so it was fairly recent. This film, I don't even know where to begin. It was the writer and director was Anna Amanpour, who is, lives in California, but she wrote this film and set it in Iran. So the whole film is in Farsi, which makes it, you feel like you're watching something that you shouldn't be watching, because it feels like it's like this weird underground movie that came out of Iran, but it was actually filmed in California. But because of where it's set and how it's filmed, and then the fact it's in Farsi, I think that gives it a little bit of an edge, because you just feel like it's, ooh, you know, you shouldn't be seeing this, because it's, you know. It was so inventive and so much fun. absolutely loved this film. I watched this movie and I thought, I can't wait to watch this movie again after I saw it. And it really came to mind when you're talking about that at the end, you know, sometimes I just want a cold stop when it comes to a movie. I feel like Let the Right One In, I think, could have. I was like, it came up to a scene. I'm like, okay, credits. And though there was like a little coda. I'm like, they didn't need that.
Right.
This film is kind of like credits, then credits. Yes! It was perfect. I love it. It ends with questions.
Yes.
You know, what happens? What happens next? I don't know. I like that.
Yes.
It was an awesome night. It was really cool of the museum to do this. The crowd went up and went down throughout the night because it was just pretty much open door. You could come and go, come in for one film, come in for all three. I sat for all three, even the one that I, you know, it starts getting late, but it's like, I have seen this one and it's kind of boring. But it was the Nosferatu remake from... I can't think of the director's name now. Blanking, I'm not going to look it up right now.
It's fun. Why would you remake that movie?
Yeah. The idea of you take something that was the silent and black and white and redoing it and with sound and dialogue and color, I get it. But this film it was an exercise in padding for sure. You know, there's like, oh, look at the beautiful Carpathian Mountains. And look, here's a bat and here's the stream. And it's like, but it's still set in the 1800s or whatever. I'm like, I don't imagine the 1800s. They had a steel girdrail along the path of the river. You know that this person's walking along. There's just too many things that kind of you point out. Like that's modern. You know, right. Why is there a parking curb in your 18? You know, kind of thing. Yeah, it's not that great of a film, and it was a tough one to end on when you're. It's like you're trying to struggle to stay asleep, and it you're going outside. Like, give me a Coke.
Yeah,
anything. But yeah, it was a fun night, and I was thrilled just for that second film, for The Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I thought it was fantastic. I highly recommend checking that out.
Keeping with the horror, the last movie I saw, which I saw the trailer of this, and I laughed, and I was like, okay, I'm going to see this movie because it's going to be so bad I'm going to enjoy myself, which was Countdown, the movie where you download an app and it will tell you to the second when you're going to die.
Oh, okay. And I have heard a little bit about this.
It was not a bad movie.
Really? Cool.
It was not terrible. It wasn't great. It wasn't like, oh my God, go see this movie. But it was not at all the dumpster fire I thought it was going to be. It actually was pretty clever. Kind of jump scare kind of horror, but not so much that you were getting frustrated. Like they spaced out the jump scares and you could see them coming, but they didn't do like a loud musical thing for it. It wasn't like boom. It was just sort of like, oh, there's a hand now. Wait, whoa, kind of thing. And there was also this really clever message about victims shouldn't feel blamed. Mm-hmm. And they did that for multiple points throughout the movie, different reasons why of different characters feeling like it's my fault. And it's like, no, it's not your fault. This thing that happened to you, you were a victim. It happened to you. It's not your fault that it happened. It's the fault of the person that did it to you. And there's different reasons why different characters learn that. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this trailer needed to be improved because this is actually a decent movie.
So, yeah, there's a little bit of intelligence in this movie rather than just being like Final Destination 6 or something.
Exactly. And that's what I thought it was going to be. Yeah, every time I showed somebody this trailer, they would laugh and they were like, that sounds like a bad Final Destination movie.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that. It was pretty good.
Oh, interesting. Very good. All right. That's worth checking out then.
I was really surprised with it. Yeah.
Now, is that theaters or is that Netflix? Is that theaters? Okay. Yeah. I definitely have to maybe look that one up. That, again, might be a home video kind of thing, but I'll keep that in mind. I'll definitely jot that down for future.
Is what I'll say.
Yeah.
It's like not great, but it's like it's not nearly as craptastic as the trailer made it seem.
Fair enough.
So that's it.
All right. Excellent. Well, we'll go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at 1998's Small Soldiers.
Everything else is just a toy.
Thank you. I'm Alan.
And I'm James.
And we're the hosts of your new favorite podcast, The Test of Time.
On our show, we talk about our favorite movies from the past, mostly from the 80s and 90s.
There's Forrest Gump, which I hate.
Weekend at Bernie's, which I hate.
And plenty of movies we both love, but still love to talk about, like Risky Business, Swingers, E.T., Big, and more.
We talk about the movies and debate if they still hold up today.
In other words, do they stand the test of time?
So check us out. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and all the usual podcast places.
Check out our website, testoftimepod.com, for a full list. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Test of Time Pod. It's Test of Time to subscribe.
I can't believe you said that.
It's the Test of Time. James and Allen have to say, do the movies you love still hold up today?
Now, this was fun. I have not seen this film probably since 98, 99.
Okay.
Probably home video or whatever. I had forgotten so much about this film. It was like watching it for the first time.
Great.
Let's go ahead and do you have a synopsis? Let's go start with that.
Yes. So directed by Joe Dante, Alan is a kid living in a small town. He works in his dad's antique toy shop, is bored, and constantly butts heads with his parents. When he finds a way to help make the shop some money, Alan discovers the new war-based figures are not only alive, but they're going to actually fight and put everyone he cares about in the crossfire.
Very nice. Yeah, I didn't look up anything on the film prior to watching it. So as soon as it starts playing, I see Joe Dante.
Yep.
And then, of course, through the film, I see all the Joe Dante regulars.
Yep.
And I was like, I'm so excited.
And all of the references to like Gremlins and whatnot.
Yes, exactly. That made it just so much fun. I think Joe Dante, we could discuss and we could probably argue about whether Joe Dante has had some misses, you know, or whether even some of his hits are really as great as they are. But he's the filmmaker that I just love because of what he does and who he brings into all his films. And it's such a treat to watch him, especially when, you know, within the first 5 minutes, Dick Miller's on the screen.
Yes.
Like, I'm in.
Yes. And the thing about Joe Dante is that guy never plays it safe.
Mm-hmm.
He swings for the fence every time. And, you know, I saw what you had written about this movie, about how you wished it was a little bit more Joe Dante kind of movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if you looked it up, but he was going more of an older teen to young adult kind of audience. He wanted a more kind of a graphic movie. But because it's a movie about toys, that's when the studio was like, oh, let's bring in all these family-friendly sponsors.
We got Burger King on board.
Right. Yeah. And when they found out what the movie was going to be, they were going to pull out their sponsorship. And the studio was like, oh, we'll put more kid-friendly stuff in it. And so partway through production, they were kind of forced to shoehorn take out stuff.
I would have loved to have seen this, the film Joe Dante signed on for.
And so you can't even say, oh, well, we'll just get a director's cut, because like they didn't film stuff that he wanted to do. This was like through production that they made these changes. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't even, it exists only as a script, really.
Right. Should be a fun script. If that exists, people, let me know.
Right.
And send me a link, because I would love to read the original script on this. Because that would be really cool. Yeah, there's times where I said, I don't know how much they changed, but you could tell what was added that was more of the kid-friendly stuff, and I felt like it really stood out. Even, I'm guessing the one Gorgonite that was like the crazy spinny guy, hey, you know, like, yeah, that was for the kids.
That's for the kids. No question.
I'm guessing he was an original script.
Or when he spun, it was way worse.
Yeah.
He spins and it cuts your leg off.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's moments like that where it's like, yeah, that's just not good. Mm-hmm. It's still an incredibly fun film, and I'm amazed. Stan Winston does the practical effects on this. Of course, does an amazing job, as always. And I was really impressed, and I was not expecting the CGI that is used matches up so freaking well.
You can see when it becomes CGI and when it's practical, but it is not jarring. It doesn't take you out. You're not like, that's fake. You're just sitting there going like, Not bad.
If on a casual view, I'm going to say there's a lot that would go by without you even noticing.
Right.
There's only one moment that I thought really stood out for me was like when the kid asks the one archer, so, well, walk to the end of the table.
Yes.
And the thing walks to the table. Like, that's 90s CGI.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see it. You can see the difference. You could definitely tell something wasn't happening in camera right there. But other rest, than that.
When they're jumping on people, when they're fighting each other, you're like, okay, that
yeah, how
looks
much,
like it's happening.
Yeah, or maybe some of it is practical.
Like they're
and,
throwing toys on
right,
people.
And maybe they added some CG, you know, eye on top of it or something. I don't know, but it's almost flawless. There's really only a few moments when the one commando busts out of his
box.
The box, the plastic is obviously CG and stuff, but...
But it doesn't bother you.
No,
you
it really
see
doesn't.
It and you're like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. It's 1998. Go for it. What a fun film, though. I was just amazed at how well this holds up. And
you could
show this now as just a good action film. And honestly, in today's audience, this could be. I mean, yeah, it is a kid's film. It's a family movie. I'll call it a family movie. I don't want to say it's a kid's movie, but it's a family movie. And there's a lot of nice things in here, which I think was a little ahead of its time as far as, you know, the bad guys are the commandos, are the human characters.
Yeah.
And the good guys are the alien,
monsters.
The weird creatures and the monsters. I'm like, that's a little progressive for 1998. I thought that was a nice touch. Real interesting.
Yeah, there's even a line in there towards the end where Chip Hazard and Archer are fighting each other, and Chip Hazard said, "You got a lot of guts. Let's see what they look like." And Archer goes, "They're the same as yours."
Yeah, plastic and wires,
right.
The same
but
as yours.
But it's just that idea of, like, you know, it's like, is this like a racism message? Like, this is
a little bit
really clever.
Yeah, no, I think you could definitely,
like, I look different, but I'm not different.
Right. No, I really like that, and I again just really kind of surprised at how, you know, modern this film from 1998 feels.
I came across a review somebody wrote last year on it, and they had said that that it's a movie that might even be more relevant today with messages like that, and then messages of, you know, because the whole premise is it's a defense company that buys out a toy company with the plan of marketing war toys to get people back into the mindset of supporting the armed forces, like starting with the kids and things like there's a long-term goal here. And that when you look at, like, we've got companies that do think, like Amazon, this article pointed out, Amazon works with the Pentagon.
Right.
Like, that's really relevant, and that's not that different from what this movie's trying to tell you about how these things that we as consumers go towards aren't just that.
Yeah, I mean, that happens all the time with all kinds of corporations where you just there's always fails, there are buyouts, there's, you know, acquisitions, and you end up with all this stuff and one doesn't know what it's doing, but suddenly you got all these people that are connected and can share and whatever along the lines, and like, yeah, it's not crazy.
Right.
It's not without out of the realm of possibility that, you know, the next generation Teddy Ruxpin or something gets the wrong processor or something and he starts spouting out launch codes.
Burn the bear. Other bit is this was actually Phil Hartman's last theatrical movie.
Yeah. Very dark circumstances under, you know, he was murdered by, was it his wife or ex-wife? Yeah. Shortly after this, he filmed his parts in this film.
Right.
So it's
before it came out, he had died. And I think they had changed a few things in the movie with his character to, like, not upset anyone.
Right. Kind of keep him out of harm's way kind of thing. There was also one of the commando characters shared a name that was very similar to some kid that went and, like, shot up his high school.
Oh, I didn't
hear
that.
In Oregon or something like that. And so they kind of kept that character. It was in the film, but then when it came to all the marketing and the toys, you didn't find them.
Mm.
So a lot of weird, dark stuff kind of leading up to and and the production of this film. But despite all that, it still ends up to be a damn fun film.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to say that a dozen times in this podcast. So yeah, Phil Hartman's last appearance. Some fantastic voice talents here. We got Tommy Lee Jones as Chip Hazard, the lead commando. We had
Frank Langella.
Right, Frank Langella is Archer.
Archer. Mm-hmm. Who, I love him in this role. Like, his voice really brought something to that character of, like, yeah, he's a leader and he's very wise, but there's also, like, a bit of sadness behind the sound that he brought of, like, they just see me as a monster. They right. Like, my fate is to lose, to hide, yeah. and to eventually get killed. That is in that voice almost the whole time.
I loved that they were... These toys were conscious of what they were programmed to do. The Gorgonites were, we hide, because if we fight, we know we lose. I mean, that's it. That's their place in life. I'm like, that's terrible.
Yeah. You know?
And that's ends up being a lot of the part of the story is, like, you got to go beyond that, that maybe you will lose, but you still have to fight.
Yeah.
Like, that ends up being a great message film.
Yeah.
Again, I'm going to keep saying surprising. It's just or progressive. It's like 1998. You don't expect films to have much in the way of messages. You don't expect films to actually have a lot of forethought. I mean, one of the films I watched was from the 90s. You know, this past October, and it was an action film with Rutger Hauer, and it was a monster movie. No real explanation. What's the monster? Where it came from? No,
don't kill it.
Just kill it. No explanation whatsoever. Just destroy the monster, and like that's what you expect out of the 90s.
Yeah.
not well thought out plots and motivations for your toy characters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought was great. Script writing. I like, you know, the commandos. Chip Hazard. Most of his talk is all like
references
yes. and slogans from other companies and manufacturers and stuff. I thought was fantastic. Yeah. His heart stops, but his spirit will keep going and going and going.
And I think, like, even though we find out they're AIs and they can learn and they can form any thought or sentence they want, there's something about Chip Hazard who wants to keep spouting all of this stuff at you, who mm-hmm. wants to keep using slogans and whatnot at you, because that's who he is. He's the leader, and he wants to recruit you to his cause. And so he's going to use the phrases that have worked. Like, there's something right. really clever mm-hmm. in having him always be like that. Whereas all of the other commandos are just sort of like, hey, let's do this. Let's go there. I got this. And he's just sort of like, you know,
nope.
No, he doesn't do that at all. He just starts saying, like, you know, he references Patton right in the beginning of the movie. Yes, where he walks that. In front of the
flag puzzle.
Right.
That was great.
Yeah, it's just like that's who his character is. His character is the leader and the army recruitment kind right. of thing. This cast, you've got David Cross, Jay Moore, Dennis Leary, Dick Miller, Kirsten Dunst, Kevin Dunn.
I loved Kevin Dunn was the father.
He
was so good in this. People, watch this movie, and if you know the old Kolchak series, you tell me if Kevin Dunn could not do an incredible Vincenzo, the annoyed boss of Kolchak. Just please, someone else tell me I'm not crazy in this. Sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. You've got Phil Hartman. You've got Robert Picardo in one scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, Joe Dante regular.
Right.
Right.
And then the voice cast. You had Jim Brown. You had Bruce Dern, Ernest Borgnine, George Kennedy.
You got the Dirty Dozen.
Exactly. that was intentional.
Yeah.
Clint Walker. Michael McKean is one of the Gorgonites.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Shearer. And they got Sarah Michelle Gellar and Christina Ricci to do the voices of the Wendy dolls.
Gwendy dolls.
Gwendy dolls. Yeah. So, like, damn. Mm-hmm.
It's a huge cast. It's just an incredible cast. I don't remember, how did this do at the time that it came out?
So, it was made on a $40 million budget, and it took in $71.1 million. So
it doubled.
It made
almost
its money.
Doubled, yeah.
Not bad for the late 90s.
Well, and we were just talking earlier about sequels and stuff like that. I'm amazed that this wasn't the beginning of a franchise.
Yeah, I think it was because it kind of got less than stellar reviews. It kind of got, you know, 50-50 leaning towards negative kind of reviews. So the studio was probably just sort of like, nah, that's fine. One and done. It made us some, you know, made a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. Maybe it didn't make that much money because I'm sure they advertised the hell out of it.
Right.
Which is funny because that's the opposite message of what the movie is supposed to be. So maybe that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. But I was very surprised that we didn't get, you know, even direct to video. I think there was a video game.
I'm sure there was a lot of things.
Yeah. Had it been happened a few years later, I think you definitely would have had franchise, whether it did well or not. They would have just, you know, done it all animated or something mm-hmm. like that and done direct to video or something like that. Yeah, like I said, it had been so long since I'd seen it, I forgot everything about this plot. I forgot that it was live action. You know, I thought this was like real early, like Toy Story kind of, no, live action, practical effects, little CG added in. It was so much fun to watch it, only having little glimpses of it in my head, and right. then be able to watch it again and see, and put all the rest of the puzzle pieces back together. It was brilliant. I just really loved this film. Mm. I'm not really adding much credit okay. to this.
I really liked how it was a critique that still holds up about how we market toys to kids.
Yeah.
Of, you know, because you've got that whole meeting at the beginning, and David Cross is trying to pitch his Gorgonites as these characters that kids are supposed to learn about. Like, they're not supposed...
Yep, learn. That doesn't right. sell.
Exactly. And so the other guy pitches the Commandos, and then it's the head of the company who's like, they're going to fight. You have to have an enemy. So yeah. the Gorgonites are the monsters that die, and you see David Cross's heart just breaking. Mm-hmm. He's like, no! But then it's that part of, like, you know, aren't these toys violent? Don't call them violent. Call it action. Kids like action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, holy crap, we still do this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, there's, and that's exactly how these toys would be marketed today.
Yeah.
They would definitely be the good guys, the humans, against the evil monsters.
And I thought about it. If these were toys that came out, minus the whole AI take over your front yard kind of thing,
yeah.
if these were a real set of toys, I would have been a Gorgonite kid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I 100%.
I want an Oculon. That guy was
right.
cool.
Right. They're different. Like, all the Commandos look the same. They all pretty much do the same thing. They say the same thing. The voices for the Gorgonites are completely different. Their abilities are completely different. I would have absolutely been a Slamfist kid. Like, there he is with the big rock hand. Like, that would have been my guy.
That slow, what are we doing?
Yeah. And then he's like, Sanctuary.
Loved Oculon. Archer was just cool looking.
Yes.
Definitely would have had one of him on my shelf.
He was a bit of a Thundercat.
Yeah, a little bit. I was reading some trivia and everything that they kind of based the Gorgonites sort of like on the He-Man series of
you
toys.
Can see it.
I think maybe a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And I like how you had those one set where they work together. There's the real tiny one and he slingshots off of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my toys. Like,
right.
I don't need the soldier. Like, I was never into G.I. Joe. I wasn't into Transformers. I didn't like war toys. Mm-hmm. I liked the Ninja Turtles where they were different and they had their own unique abilities and stuff. And
right.
yeah, that's my kind of stuff. So I'm a little sad there aren't Gorgonite toys.
Or I don't know, were there?
But like today, ongoing, like I would be yeah. into a Gorgonite series.
Oh, can you imagine a series of these toys made with the perfection of like the, what's his name? Did the Spawn and all those, the McFarlane toys.
Oh.
Those real detailed,
yeah.
tall. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be cool.
Because that's what these look like. They yeah. all look like they were good foot tall.
Yeah. Those would be some impressive toys. I'd get those. That would be a set I'd spend some money on, have
yeah.
them up on a shelf. No, there is definitely some statements here about consumerism. The whole idea that in the very end, the guy just, he walks with a printer that just prints off checks, you know,
yes.
and hands off to people. Like, you can't just buy us off. Oh, apparently you can.
Right.
You know, definitely a little bit of commentary there. The, like you were saying about the marketing, you know, you feel for the guy who, you know, the father who owns this toy store that's like no war toys. You know, his toys are very, very family, you know, very not family, but you know, very friendly toys. They're educational toys. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, put your boat in the water, sailing ships, model airplanes, that sort of thing. I feel for them. I mean, that's kind of like, you know what, though? That's the toy store that I want to shop in. I would go and visit that toy store.
Same.
Because those are the toys that have, like, all the skill that goes into building those toys that are, like, you know, the handmade, the wood, and it'll do the trick, but it's just a rubber band and a piece of wood. But exactly. it can flip and do something, you know. I like that stuff a lot.
Yes.
So that's definitely the toy store I would go visit, but I do understand that that's the toy store that's not going to make the money.
Right.
Because they don't have the latest action, the latest movie tie-in toy or something. So, yeah, there's lots of little bits of messages and commentary in this film. And then, of course, yeah, I want to go to Toy World, you know, go to the big box stores versus the little mom and pop store. It's all in this movie. I enjoyed Phil Hartman's character. Again, a little bit of message maybe or commentary on the, you know, the sort of audiophile that he thinks he is, or the TV, the video file. He's got the giant big screen TV with the giant speakers, and I think the color's off a little bit. Yeah, definitely the gamma. Hold on, yeah.
The flesh tones are all wrong. Like he's gonna mess with the remote for the next hour rather than sit and enjoy what he has.
Right, it's more about the technology than what you're actually viewing on it.
And it's funny because I was my mom's visiting right now, and I just rewatched it yesterday, and so she's watching it with me. And when that part happened, she went, "Oh my God, it's your father!" So this movie's got something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've met those kind of people where I feel like I get it that you want to have good stuff, but if you're spending that much time assembling this home video system or whatever, are you really watching what's being played?
Right.
Or is it all about what you're hearing and no, I don't hear that.
Right.
You know, because I'm listening to the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to hear those subtle tones. If you listen really close at 28:19, you can hear the camera roll. Well, I don't want to hear that.
You can hear that sound effect that was in their first movie from 30 years ago. Like, thanks.
Yeah, I guess that's
it's
cool.
It's fun bit of trivia, but we can just watch the movie.
Yeah, please. I think it's hysterical that, you know, Phil Hartman, who's all about modern, and this guy that owns the antique toy store end up as neighbors. There's a certain amount of
arguing over a tree.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Phil Hartman was right. It's over his line. He can cut the branches because it was blocking.
I'll check the zoning laws. Oh, the guy goes back inside, saws it right down.
The satellite dish. Yeah. That's of course the enormous, you know, the size of a UFO in the backyard. That was kind of fun. That's the one bit that kind of maybe dates it to the 80s.
Yeah.
Or the 90s, I should say. But the rest of the film, surprisingly, because the CGI and everything is so good, and because they use the practical effects through about two-thirds of the film or whatever, it holds up really well. It's not a dated film.
Right.
I mean, there's like I was saying, the satellite dish is kind of like, why is it so big?
Right.
The kid's computer... It's not
okay.
It's fine. It's a big monitor,
right? Their outfits, their wardrobes, things like that.
Yeah, but even those aren't that. I mean, the kids is running around like a plaid shirt or something.
Just
like that.
Just the part in like the meeting, like their jackets are a little too big because they're not tailored next to Dennis
maybe have the
Leary.
Shoulder, yeah, that kind of
like
thing.
That.
Yeah, those are the aren't the things that are going to really stand out. You don't have anybody with the ridiculous poofed hair or something like that or whatever. So the rest of it. It holds up pretty well as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
The young stars, like I said, Kirsten Dunst and
Gregory Smith.
Yeah, Gregory Smith, all excellent. They just did a great job. Gregory Smith isn't anybody. I don't think I've seen him in anything else. I think he's kind of more of a.
I think the only other thing I know I saw him in is he was in Harriet the Spy.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the friends. I think that's
he's still acting, but he's been doing a lot of like short films, maybe some independents, and doing some television and stuff.
It's one of those kids that like the 90s tried to turn into somebody, and he didn't come out the other end.
Right, yeah. So he did a great job. I thought he was good. You know, if this was probably one of his earliest works and he gets to kiss Kristen Dunst, you know, as a kid, that's not a bad way
he
to stretch
your career.
He
still tells that story.
Exactly.
The other thing I love, love, love about this movie is how the commandos build their weapons. It's all just stuff from the house, and you're sitting there going like, oh, it's a nail gun. It's the electric right. chainsaw. It's tennis balls and a lighter with like some hairspray to make a flamethrower. It's a skateboard.
It's the borrowers from hell.
Right. You know? It is. And it's you're looking at it, and you just see stuff from the kitchen, the garage, everything. And you're like, wow, our homes have the worst weapons in them in the world. When you start to think like, you know, is your home safe? No, it is not, because there's an arsenal in there.
I really liked how everybody kind of, the personalities really came out when they're under siege from these toys. First yes. of all, they were, once you
oh, the mom.
Once you kind of, look, this is happening. Everyone's like, oh, okay, it's happening.
There's no denying it.
There's lots of, you're crazy at first until suddenly, oh, there's a toy driving up the front lawn with a flamethrower.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone's on board with what's going on. Right. But the Abernathy mom was brilliant.
Yes.
She just suddenly turns into, I mean, she's a mom. She's
yes.
like, I'm organized. I'm okay. You in the closet. You block that door. Close that window. She's
yes.
on it.
She
I
gets
loved
the
her.
Tennis racket and she starts fighting back.
Yeah, with the flaming tennis balls. Yeah. Nice backhand, honey. Yeah, she was awesome. Fantastic. I love that. And of course, Phil Hartman is still Phil Hartman. He's yep. I'm in the closet with the women.
Yes.
No sudden bouts of courage from him.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I'm so glad you added this film to the list, because I don't think I probably wouldn't have
never
watched it again. It just would have been one of those movies that I remember watching years ago and I wouldn't have picked up again. This is definitely one I'll have to sit down and watch with Ben. I didn't get a chance to watch it as like a family viewing or whatever.
He'll probably love it.
Yeah, I think you'll like it a lot.
So any other favorite scenes?
The Siege was great. Just
yes.
because of what you were saying, the toys, the nail guns. I mean, that's frightening. The nail gun firing around is like,
And when it hits people. There's
yeah,
no like
yeah.
you keep getting just missed. Like Alan, at one point, I think it's like those like little forks that you use for corn on the cob.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
He gets like five
one
of them
in his
leg.
He's got to pull them out.
The dad gets a nail like right to the side of his knee, and you're sitting there going like, "Yeah, you'd be down. Like
that,
you're
that
done.
That hurt. Yeah,
yeah.
That would hurt. Yeah. The Siege is great. I'm trying to think what else. Again, the scenes with the father. He's just is that great kind of little comedic actor. Maybe pretty typical for a Joe Dante film. There's
yeah.
always someone a little bit like that, I think.
What are you packing? Packing you.
You know, the nods to all the Joe Dante's film. My password's Gizmo.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thanks for keeping it secret.
And there's a little Gizmo keychain in the dumpster when he's yeah. trying to find the Gorgonites. Yeah.
Yeah, I think someone, I saw some tribute to, there's like a skull on a shelf that's apparently supposed
a
to be
gremlin,
a
I
gremlin.
Think.
Yeah. Very, very cute. Dick Miller showing up a couple times.
Yep.
Robert Picardo, who came in between seasons 4 and 5, I think it said, of Voyager to
oh,
do
nice.
His cameo.
He sneezes inside his mask. That didn't have to happen. They were just like, you know, it would be funny.
Exactly.
If he can't leave where he's working.
He's in the clean room.
And he sneezes. Like, okay. And he keeps talking. Like, this happens to the yeah. guy every day.
Yeah, doesn't even notice it at first until that final scene and he turns and looks. And
to me, there's a lot of things in this movie, a lot of good messages, a lot of creepy moments. Nothing tops, nothing is scarier than when all the Gwendy dolls come to life.
Yeah.
And it's just
like the swarm.
There's yeah. like 50 of them. And it's, yeah. you know, and I think they're playing like the music from Bride of Frankenstein
yes.
in the background as they're all coming to life. And it's like, and they're just spouting what a Gwendy doll would say. Like,
right.
let's accessorize as they're
yeah.
like tying her down and they're holding knives to
mm-hmm.
her. Mm-mm, sorry, I'm scared.
Yeah. And that, again, you could call that, certainly now, I think you could call that a little bit of a little bit of commentary on how toys are marketed to girls.
Yeah.
Even to this day, you know, Mattel tries with the Barbie franchise or whatever, but I think a lot of the attempts are sort of half-hearted.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of put out the, oh, we put out our special edition, you know, Air Force Barbie, but you still have a shelf with 500 all pink, let's go shopping Barbies. So thanks for trying. I don't know.
Right.
But no, I don't think I have anything else. Yeah, that was pretty crazy. That's probably where the, you got to really take in the, put the suspension of disbelief and overdrive is when they can make the Gwendys move.
Right.
When they weren't, constructed
out and that works. It doesn't work. Keep going.
Yeah. The fact that they don't have any moving parts.
Right. They're just plastic dolls.
Right. But I'll give it to you. It's fun. You know, they serve their purpose, you know. No, I don't think I have anything else. The whole movie was a little bit of a favorite. Really. I just really enjoyed it.
Great.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Is there anything else to say?
It's just a movie that I always recommend to people because, like you, people are like, I kind of remember that. I think I saw it when it first came out, and it was just one of those movies that every, like, I saw it a bunch when it was on HBO, so it was very, I've always had a very clear memory of it, and then I think I caught it again, like, 10-ish years ago, so it kind of got refreshed, and it's always stayed in my mind as this is an underrated movie. This is a movie that should have been more appreciated, even with the whole studio getting involved. I think it's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's more than serviceable. What the full version is probably would have been even better, but yeah, you can sit the kids down and watch it together, and then you can talk with your kids about it of like, you know, do you understand why the Commando Elites were the bad guys? Do you understand why the Gorgonites were the good guys? Things like that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, as typically when the studios get involved with any production, it's not good.
Right.
You know, the results don't turn out well.
Non-filmmakers trying to make a film.
Exactly. It's a miracle that this one came out the way it did.
Mm.
I'm actually surprised. You said you used to catch it on like on cable or whatever. This isn't one that I've ever seen, you know, in the channel guide. You know, what's on? Oh, look, they're showing Small Soldiers. You don't see it. It's like the studio made the film. It was a Universal picture, and then they just kind of they forgot about it. You know, and they just put it on the shelf and they release maybe, you know, a few DVDs a year or something for anyone that might want to buy it. And that's it. And I'm like, that's unfortunate.
It's one to save. Absolutely.
Yeah. This is one that should be on the streaming services and easily accessible.
It is on Netflix. That's how I rewatched it.
Good. Cause yeah, it should be on something where you don't have to pay extra for it. Cause you know, you want something that this is one that you could dial up for your kids and watch together, or they can just watch themselves. There's nothing, you know, overly terrible in this film. I would recommend, like you were saying, watching it with them so you could talk about it afterwards. I'd absolutely recommend it. If you have not seen this film, or if it's been a long time since you've seen this film, I'd really strongly recommend checking it out again. You know, go to the library, Netflix, dial it up somewhere and check it out. Well, we're going to go back to kind of where we came from a little bit here, because we're going back to another film that, again, I remember watching many times as a kid. A little bit of another time travel film.
Hmm.
This is a little bit in the same vein as the Philadelphia Experiment, so it'll be interesting to see how this one holds up. We're going to look at 1980's The Final Countdown next time. So this should be... this should be fun. One you've not seen this one. So we'll see how it does. I remember watching it maybe 20 years ago or so and still enjoying it. So we'll see if it's still the case.
And it's on Amazon Prime, so that's how I'll be rewatching it. So
nice.
If anyone needs to refresh their memory, there it is.
Very easy to see then. Excellent. I did not know it was on Prime. Good. I've got like a copy from the library, but
okay.
Prime is awesome. Prime has led me down many, many paths.
Sure.
All right. Well, we'll be back in a couple weeks. So thanks for tuning in. Bye.